You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 215. Nothing happens until you make it happen. Anonymous.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft. It's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie is going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. Today's show is also sponsored by Indie Film Hustle Pro, our private and growing community for filmmakers and screenwriters. It was created for film creatives like you to meet, network, and support each other, learn from film industry experts, and to get the answers to your burning questions and more. The journey in this business is rough. There is no guarantee to success, but your chances of reaching your goals dramatically improve when you find others who are on the same journey as you and you work together towards a common goal. That is why I put together IFH Pro. Inside, you'll get professional networking, private and safe spaces to discuss the film business, access to advanced tools and education, up-to-date education, exclusive content not available publicly, access to IFH Pro workshops, webinars, special guests, and so, so much more. If you want to check it out, head over to indiefilmhustle.com/pro. Now, guys, today on the show, we have writer-director Dean Flesher Camp. And he is the co-creator of the new film, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. It is the new feature film by A24, who brought you this year the amazing Everything Everywhere All at Once by the Daniels. And when I saw the trailer for Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, I was blown away at like how in God's green earth did this movie get made. So after I saw it, I did everything in my power to get Dean on the show because I needed to know the story behind how he was able to get a little shell, stop motion animation shell, comped into a real world. Who financed this? How did it get to A24? How does it get a theatrical release? How did they get 60 Minutes involved? How did they get some Oscar-nominated actor involved? It was just such an amazing story. So I need you to sit back and prepare to get inspired by the story of how Marcel got to the screen. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Dean Flesher Camp. I'd like to welcome to the show Dean Flesher Camp. How are you doing, Dean?
Hi, good. How you doing?
Good, man. I was so excited to have you on the show, man, because I just had the pleasure of watching your new film, Marcel, the Shell with Shoes On, last week. And I told your PR people, I'm like, I need to have them on. I need to know how this happened. I need to know in what universe do I live in that this movie gets made and put out in a theatrical release, and it gets made in general, would be put up by A24. Like I need to know the story behind this film, because, and I was lucky because I didn't know anything about Marcel prior to watching the movie. So I was a virgin, a Marcel virgin. But as I did research for this conversation, Marcel's been around for over a decade, so we're gonna
get around. Yeah, yeah, he is. He's an old soul. You're not wrong that it's pretty unusual for a movie like this to not just get made but get distributed. It took a ton of real like blood, sweat, and indie film hustle, and it would not have gotten made. It would have we had sort of the studio offers when those original shorts were made, and they certainly were not, you know, their head wasn't really, or the heart wasn't really in the right place. And I knew that this was going to be, you know, kind of a longer road of finding financing independently, and then finding this family of incredible, brilliant collaborators that made the film possible.
So before we get into the archaeology of how Marcel got brought into this world, First and foremost, man, how and why in God's green earth did you want to get into this business?
You know, I have always been drawn to movies. I was always a big movie buff and fan. I went to film school. It's funny that the first thing that sort of took off for me was this internet short, because I think now people are saying, like, well, why did you decide to turn it into a movie? And it's like, movies were always the plan. The YouTube fame was sort of a weird, you know, happenstance. But I'm glad it happened. And I don't think that this type of film, my favorite reactions are the people that kind of are coming to it fresh, because it's been so long since we've done something with the character, and it's changed a lot. It's grown a lot. The whole backstory is sort of different and new. But I do think that it would not have gotten made, certainly not in the way it got made, with all the creative freedom that I was given, that our team was afforded, if it had not had a previously successful run as, you know, YouTube shorts and children's books. I think that there's sort of, you know, it's weird that we are sort of an adaptation of a pre-existing IP, because that's like everything that's in movies right now. Top Gun, Lightyear, everything is pre-existing IP. And it's funny that we're technically part of that, but, you know, our process and what this movie is so completely different from...
A little different than Marvel. A little different.
Yeah,
yeah. Though I would like to see Marcel in a Marvel movie. I think that would...
Sure.
Absolutely. In the new Thor.
Cinematic universe.
Universe, exactly. The cinematic MCU. Universe. So how, you know, so for everybody who doesn't know, how did this character come to life? It just seems so, just like a shell with shoes on and a googly eye. Like, it's insane. And this was like 2010, 2009, yeah, somewhere around there is when you first came up with. So how did the character just come to life?
It originally came about because the voice came first. Jenny had been doing this little tiny voice because we were sharing a hotel room for a friend's wedding with like a ton of other people to save money. And she started doing this tiny voice to joke about how sort of crushed and smushed she felt. And then when we got back to New York, where we were living at the time, I had completely forgotten that I agreed to make a video for my friend's stand-up show, like local stand-up show. And so, you know, my head popped off the pillow that morning. I was like, oh my God, that's due tomorrow. and so I just very quickly, you know, like asked Jenny, like, hey, let's write a couple jokes for that character. You have really funny voice you've been doing. And then we recorded it. Jenny did some improv around it, cut it together, ran out like a madman collecting, you know, supplies from craft stores, basically, not knowing really what it would be. I was just like, let's just get a bunch of supplies and I'll figure something out. And I made a couple of little terrible looking like goblins that that did not pass muster, and then finally landed on Marcel, who I think is so, like, you know, he's handsome and he's cute and yeah, it was sort of serendipity. And then I screened it. I think I made it and screened it within 48 hours. And then it obviously took off on the internet.
It was all stop motion animation at first, right?
So stop motion. I mean, it still is. All the characters in the film are stop motion, other than the rare exception of the insects are CG, but everything else is stop motion.
So yeah, I want to get into the technical, because I was also I'm a post guy, so I've been in post forever, and I was just like looking at it, I'm like, man, did they emulate it? Did they emulate stop motion? Did they comp it? Did they do the stop motion then comp? Like, so we'll get into all that in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, so you put out this little throwaway short. And yeah. You're like, oh, this is cute. Let's throw it up on this new thing called YouTube.
Yeah. It's hard to even imagine a time when you make a short film and it doesn't immediately get posted on YouTube or Vimeo or whatever. But 2010 was like, yeah, the only reason I put it on YouTube at all, because I was in the habit. I'd made lots of videos for, you know, friends shows or whatever. And this was one of the few that I put on the internet, because a sort of friend at that first screening, like, tap me on the shoulder when I was leaving. It was like, can you put that online? I really want to share it with my grandmother, who was at the time she had like a broken hip or wrist or something.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
She was kind of laid up in bed and homebound, and she thought it might cheer her up. And that was the only reason I put it on YouTube. So it was designed for this audience of one, but found a much larger one.
Yeah, that's the thing, that like that was literally the definition of a viral film.
Yeah.
It was completely viral. It made, what, 32 million views on the first one you did?
It's like more than that, because I took it down and I put it back up and, you know, whatever. It's like, I think it probably would be like 50 or something, which is actually, totally. Back then, I'm not even sure. I don't know what viral videos were before that, like Nyan Cat or something.
Right, exactly. So that was like an actual viral video. It wasn't like something that the algorithm picked up. Like there's no algorithm for Marcel.
No.
It was just sharing and sharing and sharing. And people are like, I got to share this. Oh my God, I got to share this. So it was truly a viral situation. So when the first reactions that you got from the, you know, from that, which is still, again, 2010 is still fairly, I mean, the internet's been around for a bit. YouTube's been around for about 5 years. I remember 2010 very well. And what happened to you and Jenny when you start seeing these numbers? You're like, what the hell's going on?
Oh, it felt pretty crazy. I weirdly was like, I don't know. I guess I was pretty enmeshed in internet culture around 2010. But because I'd had that experience of like screening it at this, like, you know, kind of like art hipster Brooklyn crowd in 2010, seeing like the most like judgmental art parts, which I consider myself one. I'm not saying that as
sure.
Seeing people who would normally be very judgmental about anything that you screen at like a live comedy show sort of just like completely melt and be like, what was that? And to see how quickly they connected with this character, I was kind of like, I think this might go viral.
Really? So you had an idea that it might go.
But yeah, I thought it would.
But the definition of viral is not 50 million views. I don't think you said, oh, this is going to go 40, 50 million easy.
No. I thought it would get passed around like, you know, like a small, you know, slightly popular Vimeo video. And then maybe we could like leverage that to make a bigger project with it.
That was the mindset already. I mean, you were the hustling filmmaker. You're like, okay, if this thing goes, we're going to leverage this thing. We're going to go out and get some financing. We're going to make a feature of this damn thing.
Oh, yeah, so, totally. At the time I was editing, like I was taking the worst jobs. Like I was an editor. And so I was just like, yeah, how do I segue into directing?
Oh, dude, don't you speak into the choir, brother. I was in post for 25 years, color grading, editing, doing the worst. Yep. Dude, I used to edit promos for Matlock for a television station back in West Palm Beach. All right. I was like,
I might have you beat. One of my first jobs editing, was editing, a tutorial for how to do I think they advertised on like late night television. It was a tutorial for how to do home water births.
Okay. So I'm going back into my archives. I'm see if I can one up that, but man, I don't really think
Matlock's pretty great.
I mean, Matlock's pretty good. Yeah. But a water birth tutorial for late night. I mean, I'm going to give it to you on that one, man. I think you won.
And it was like footage from like amateur, like people who were not, you know, professional filmmakers, like filming their own home water births as part of this thing.
So the home water birth wasn't lit properly, is what you're saying?
No.
There wasn't composition. There wasn't a techno crane rolling in.
Not a lot of mise-en-scene, frankly, for my taste.
Okay, so the first video goes and it you know, goes viral enough. Of course, even then, people were especially, I remember especially because I had a short film that was making the rounds through Hollywood at that time, and I was doing the water bottle tour and all that stuff. So I imagine that you got calls from Hollywood and you're like, oh, we got to make this into a movie. I want you to tell everybody, because I know what happened, even without even knowing what happened. I know they were probably saying, you know, insane stuff like, we should team Marcel up with The Rock.
You're dead on.
So what were the pitches that you got for your character from Hollywood?
The one that has stuck in my mind was that a studio had recommended that we partner him with, I forget it, I'm pretty sure it was Ryan Reynolds, that we partner him with Ryan
Reynolds. Not about it.
Crime together. And I was like, I'd watch it.
I mean, I'd watch it too. I mean, it's not the worst idea. It's not a hard no. It's a soft no on that, but I'd watch it. Like, there's some things you just like, you should team up with The Rock. I'm like, I don't know if Marcel and The Rock are really
right.
Matchy or Bruce Willis and him. Yeah, the chemistry.
Bruce Willis would be cool. I was like, then when Detective Pikachu came out, I was like, oh, we got pitched Detective Pikachu.
Exactly what it was. But your IP was not nearly as big as Pikachu. So
that's right. No, they were smart to go with Pikachu. So we did that water bottle tour, and it was just very clear, like, oh, they were trying to graft him onto a tentpole franchise. And I was always looking to make, you know, more of a portrait piece about Marcel to like really, because I felt like there's no reason to blow it out. Marcel is already tiny in a blown out world. Taking him on a, you know, fighting terrorists in Paris or whatever is like, why?
Again, I'd watch that. Marcel fighting terrorists.
You're going to see it. You're going to be on an airplane looking through the new releases and you're going to see that soon.
Is that Marcel with Chris Tucker? Is that what's going on right now?
That would be incredible.
Everyone listening. Listen, a lot of studio execs listen to this show. So, we're just throwing this. We're spitting out gold. Me and Dean are spitting out gold right now.
That's right.
All right. So you had to, at least at that point, because a lot of filmmakers, when they go on these water bottle tours, if they're lucky enough to get this kind of attention, they fold. They'll go, okay, yeah, I just want to get in the game. I just want to go. But you and Jenny both said, no, we're gonna protect Marcel from the savages of Hollywood.
Yeah, it did feel like something that was like, oh, got it. Like, because he's cute, it's sort of like they're picturing this could be the next Minions or something. And, you know, that was like so out of my just like taste. And I think it was, it also, you know, like indie film might have been a little more, the world might have been a little more robust when 12 years ago. And so I think, you know, nowadays, yeah, you see a ton of directors making that jump. And I don't blame them because they want to make a living and they don't want to spend another 7 years, you know, financing and doing it independently. So I totally get it. At the time, yeah, I was just like, no, this character has become very dear to us. We know him incredibly well. And we know that those little shorts have revealed like 2% of what this movie could be. And throwing him into the mix with Chris Tucker in it.
But now that you've told his story, he's back on the table. I'm just throwing that out.
That's right.
You've made your art piece. Now let's sell out.
Yeah, come at me, Disney.
Yeah, exactly. We're willing to sell the IP to Disney any day. Let us know.
That's been the other difficult thing is we have held on to the IP.
You've made multiple shorts of Marcel over the years. As I saw, it was like every few years you would make a new short. You had a children's books written about him. So this was an IP. You literally did kind of create an IP, which is really an indie IP, which is really interesting.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a really unusual opportunity that we found ourselves in. The books we did ourselves, we wrote and I photographed them and then we worked with an illustrator like to turn them into paintings. And so it has never been the kind of thing, like I get a little miffed when I see people say, you know, oh, Marcel, of course he's a movie now. They like sold the rights to someone. It's like, no, man, it's me and Jenny. And it has been the entire time. And we've held onto the rights to this character. We've never merchandised him. And we're beginning to try to figure out how to do that in a way that is holistic to the character and involves, you know, me overseeing all those things. But we've never really done the smart thing so that we can all buy houses in Malibu or whatever.
I mean, 100 million. If someone shows up with 100 million tomorrow, I mean, it's a conversation. It's a conversation. Yeah, it's not a hard no. It's not a hard no. I hope that this interview helps you along these routes that someone's like, I saw the Indie Film Hustle interview, man. I'll give you 75 mil cash for the IP. I think we can make this work.
Yeah. What's your commission, man?
Hey, no, Alex. Just the love, brother. Just the love for Marcel. That's all I want. So the next question is, all right. So now Hollywood has has pitched you Pikachu. And gone down that road. So you guys said, okay, we gotta kind of make this ourselves.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
So now starts the journey of finding people who are insane enough to give you money to make a movie about a talking shell.
Yeah.
In a house. I mean, it's I'm sitting, and I have to stop you for a second. I was literally sitting watching the movie and I'm going, how did this get, like, how? Ooh. But, and this is before I knew about the IP and knew about the shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
So that makes a little bit more sense, but not much more. Not much more.
So there's a period after those, that the water bottle tour where, you know, we're making a kid's book maybe, and we kind of just said no to that. We walked away from those and we didn't do anything with, we were just like, let's just keep our character and, you know, not get into something that we can't handle and that we're going to be not proud of. And so for, I think, like 3 or 4 years, we just didn't try to pitch it as anything bigger, but the character never went away. And Jenny and I were kind of always sort of riffing about what his world would be and jokes. And I started sort of taking, you know, lazy notes about whenever we'd have a really good idea that we loved about that. And then, you know, after like 4 years, I felt like, oh, this actually could work as like a feature film. We've sort of built out the world and done all of this, imagination building, and maybe this actually could deserve a 90-minute, like a full feature. And the first thing we did was we got in touch with Liz Holm, who had produced Obvious Child, Jenny's first kind of starring role, also in a, you know, small indie, and asked her, like, how do we, let's like do this together. Will you come on to produce it and to start really from the ground up and help us find financiers and find money for it? And so, you know, we put together a kind of prospectus and a brief, and I had done a lot of like drawing and sort of building out the world. And, you know, we did like another water bottle tour where, you know, we're a little older, a little wiser, understood who I was. And it was even more impossible than just let us make an animated movie about talking shell. It was also, I want Final Cut, and we want we want a lot of creative control, and we're also not going to sell you a screenplay. You are buying a really like a detailed outline and a vision and a group of filmmakers that will deliver. But I knew that the screenplay had to be done in tandem with recording audio. Jenny is such an incredible improviser. She's not a like sit down and write kind of person. And we had, I forget when, but we brought on Nick Paley, who's our co-writer on it. And so we were like, we don't have a finished screenplay to sell to you. You're buying this idea, this abstract, loose, imaginative story, and a process that to my knowledge is not a way that any other movie has been made before, with this sort of like full stop motion character integrated into a live action world for a feature length. And a lot of places there were, you know, one or the other of those ideas was a deal breaker. And finally we found who turned out to just be like our champions, and I'm so grateful we had them. This company called Cinereach, who financed the film almost entirely. They're a nonprofit out of New York, or a not-for-profit out of New York. They had financed before, you've heard of a lot of their, they've been a presence in indie world for a while. They financed Beasts of the Southern Wild, was their first really big one. And they usually do small grants and finishing funds and things. But they also have this incredible team of in-house producers who were amazing and came on board. And so they were the place that we found a home for it, and a home for, you know, ourselves, where we were supported creatively and financially. And they were, you know, crucial to get to a movie like this getting made.
So not only did you have the balls to to put this whole package together, I need Final Cut. You got no script.
Yeah.
You You're just basically, it's a wing and a prayer here, guys. And it's not like you've done 45 other feature films based on this kind of scenario.
Yeah,
so true. It is really unheard of. You are an anomaly that how this got made. But I think it's the power of the character that pushed it through.
Absolutely. I don't think that you'd be able to do that if it was just, you know, from scratch. And of course not. You have to have, for someone to believe and have that much faith in something that abstract and that unique, it really requires it having had some record of success. And we were lucky that that was, you know, early internet, where it was pretty democratic and pretty word of mouth successful. So because it had a little bit of a built-in audience, I think that allowed us to do that. By the way, I don't think I had balls. Confidence is just sort of ignorance dressed up.
It was ignorance is bliss. Ignorance was bliss. Doesn't everyone get Final Cut? I'm just going to ask for Final Cut. Everyone doesn't have to put in a script, right? You don't have to buy that, right? You just kind of roll with it. So I was watching the CBS Sunday Morning piece that they did on you, which was fantastic. Is it true that there was four versions of this movie made?
Yeah, I mean, so we made the movie sort of four times. We did the first round was the first couple of years was writing the screenplay. And over the course of that, we would record audio for a couple of days to integrate the, like, Jenny's great improv and like fold in Isabella and some of the other characters. So we would record a couple of days and then write and then record and write. So that first 2.5-3 years was just writing the screenplay. And towards the end of that, we were folding in storyboards. So by the very end of that process, we had made the movie in the sense that all the audio was locked, the script was locked, story was locked, and it was fully storyboarded. Kirsten Lepore and I storyboarded the entire movie. So that sort of animatic, we could watch and it was, you know, we could show to friends and get feedback. And so that was the first time. Then you go into live action and you shoot all the plates. There's sort of all the live action elements. And then that third step is the animation. I guess we made it at least three times, if not more. I'm not sure we made it four times, but something like that.
It's a lot of that. And then you were also in it as well.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
You're playing an older version of yourself.
That's so funny. Yeah. I think I'm playing who I was like maybe in college or like shortly after, like pretty down in the dumps and depressed, kind of a depressive. I'm glad I'm not that person anymore, but
I'm also glad I'm not the guy I was in college.
Yeah. Oh my God. Could you imagine?
Could you imagine? Cause it's always fun to see the 40-year-old in the club. It's always.
Yeah. Right.
In the corner, the guy with the gray and the goatee in the corner. That's exactly what you need.
The guy where you're like, does he own this place?
Does he own this place? Is he a bouncer? Like, what is he? What is he doing over there?
Yeah.
Oh, he's dancing. Is that what he calls dancing? Oh God. Now another thing, as I'm watching the movie, I'm hearing this voice, and I'm going, is that Isabella Rossellini? I'm like, no. There's no way they got Isabella Rossellini in this. And I was like, the character just kept talking. And I'm like, that's Isabella Rossellini. Like, how? So like the intrigue, my personal intrigue on how this movie was made, how in God's green earth did you pitch this to Isabella Rossellini? And she said, sure, I'm going to play a grandma shell.
I think we got super lucky. We went through, you know, a cast. We worked with a cast director, but we really wanted Isabella. And we sent her the offer, and we sent her, you know, a brief thing about Marcel and his history on the internet. And I think that she probably by herself would have been like, no, I'm Isabella Rossellini. Luckily, her daughter or her kids were, or maybe grandkids were, or no, I think her daughter was like, no, we like Marcel. Like, Marcel's cool. You should totally do this. And so she agreed to do it. And I think, like, obviously, I felt like she would be incredible at it, but I didn't know kind of how perfect she would be for it, because she is like a lot of the things that character changed once we cast her, because we were able to write it around Isabella and around what, you know, Nick and I found really charming and great about her personality. And she has so much in common with the character even before we met Isabella. Like, she literally lives on a farm and knows a ton about farming and gardening. She has a master's in animal behavior. and she also is like, she doesn't kind of suffer fools. She doesn't, she's just like a very, charmingly blunt and not mean, but charmingly blunt person who cuts right to the quick of things. And that became obviously like a central thing about Nana Connie, but some of that, some of the B-roll you can kind of hear, just like the texture of her, like, for example, when she's showing me her strawberry in the movie.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
That's literally her just showing me around her farm and me like interviewing her, asking her questions about her farm.
Really? That's how, and yeah. I'm going to incorporate that in the movie. I'm going to put that in the movie. Yeah, that is it's such a fascinating process, dude. Like this is,
yeah.
I mean, like I said, when I walked out of that theater, I'm like, I have to find out how this was made. Because look, I've been hustling in the indie film game for getting close to 30 years now. You know, with my own projects and then with the show. Now that I've heard thousands of stories, and I've studied every anomaly known to man, from mariachi to paranormal. I mean, I've studied all of them. Had a chance to talk to some of these filmmakers, and I saw this. I'm like, I can't wrap my head about how this was made, and that doesn't happen often. Normally, I'm like, oh, this is what happened. This would happen, and even with the knowledge of the shorts and the IP, it's still such an uphill battle to try to get something like this and maintain this soul that you guys were able to maintain with this the movie. You didn't skew off. You knew exactly who Marcel was, and it. You know, I mean, by the way, every time he threw up, I couldn't stop laughing. Sorry. It just came into my head. I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And the car trip. Yeah. Yeah.
One of my favorite parts as well. I think that it's like, you know, people have been asking me, obviously, well, what was the genesis? It took, you know, you made the character 12 years ago. It took 7 years to make the movie. And the answer to the question of like, how does this movie get made? In that exact very unique way is time. You in walking away from those studio deals, you also walk away from a quick turnaround, because the indie road is going to be hard, and one of your only things that's in your corner is that you have more time than like a studio would require to spit out something or put it on their slate. It's a huge advantage, but you are taking a risk that, you know, it just never sees the light of day, or especially if it's an internet thing, like you miss your moment of popularity or something. But it just felt like the right thing to do. And I knew that I would feel like a real shithead making a terrible Marcel movie with a character whose potential I knew.
Yeah, and it's remarkable. I have to ask you the question though, man. This is something that a lot of filmmakers don't understand. And are dealing with as they're listening to this right now. How did you get through those years, man? How did you get through those years of not getting the success that you wanted, not getting the opportunities you wanted, having to knock on doors and doors being closed on your face, the no's and the no's and the no's, or the yeses, but yeses you get the strings and strings. How did you get through all of those years? Because this is over a decade of your life with this character and getting this thing made. How do you keep going all those years?
Well, I think that's something that is important. At some point I realized you have to, like, I wasn't a super, I don't know, some of my like film school friends like graduated from film school and they were so, you know, willing to just kick open the door and like give someone the elevator pitch for their screenplay. And that works out sometimes. And as someone who's that just doesn't come naturally to, I realized that I was at some point, I made sort of a promise, I think with Nick Paley, who co-wrote the film, that we're always going to hold each other accountable to at least get to know an actual firm no before we give up on a project. And that is incredibly important because I'm, at least before this, I was super willing to, you know, if someone just gave me the runaround or they said, we don't know, I don't know, let's come back to me in March or whatever, you know, like I would let those failures or quasi failures really get to me. I interpreted it as a message that this project, you know, that was a no. But the truth is, you don't know unless you get to a firm no. So now I think, and I tell this to like anyone who wants to be an indie filmmaker, get to know, at least get to know, because probably they'll say yes before they say no. if you, you know,
so go
to enough people.
So now I want to ask you the technical stuff. All right. So you guys shot this.
Wait, can I say one other thing? Actually, real quick, going back to what you said about like studying El Mariachi and, you know, and those other sort of movies that, that for someone. Or anomalies. I don't remember who told me this, but I read or someone said to me, every time someone asks me how like I made it or how I got that movie, that first thing made, I tell them, here's how I made it, but don't copy my playbook because Hollywood's like a bank. And every time someone exploits an insecurity, they're going to close it up immediately. You can never do it the same way twice.
And that's the thing I've learned over the years is that when you, because I was always trying to hack my way in. I was trying to like, well, if I go down this road, right, I'll do what Kevin Smith did, or I'll do what Joe Carnahan did, or I'll do, you know, and I'll just kind of go all these ways. And I realized years later, after going back and looking, you're like, oh, there was never another El Mariachi or that style. There was never Clerks. There was never another Brothers McMullen. There was never another Paranormal Activity or Blair Witch.
Yeah.
Like they're like, they snuck into the party and then the bouncer came and shut the door and made sure nobody else got in.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
So they, so the exact same thing with Marcel. No one's ever going to walk this path. This is your path and your path alone. People can get inspiration from it. And you know, but they're like, okay, I'm going to go make a show. I promise you right now, someone's listening and is going, I'm going to go make an animated short with stop motion and I'm going to create a character and they're going to try to do this road and they're going to go, oh, it didn't work. Why did it work for them? Because it was yours. This was gifted to you from the gods. And you're like, this is yours. Take care of it and guide it through.
I don't want to discourage anyone from going and making some incredible
piece, but not the exact same thing.
But yes, exactly. Yeah, it's true. And you know, to some extent, I think to continue a healthy artistic practice, you can't get caught up in why didn't this work or how do I get to that person's level? Like, you got to just, the only thing you can control is your work.
But the thing is this, and this is something that I found so true after years of talking to all of these great filmmakers. Mm-hmm. Is every great filmmaker, every great artist, every great writer, every single one of them is true to themselves. It is their essence coming through their work. They're not copying anybody else. They're not, you know, I'm not trying to be David Fincher. I'm not trying to be Chris Nolan. They are who they are. And that is the key to success as an artist. Yeah. But that's the scariest thing to come out with a shell, with a googly eye and some shoes on and say, this is me, and put it out on the internet. Dude, I mean, seriously, that's you guys. That was something that was so purely you. It's not like you said, you know what? There was this other shell with two googly eyes. I'm going to do one. It was something that was so personal to you. And that's what made the success of that character.
Yeah. It's also a numbers game. Like, and luck. I mean, you reduce the amount of luck required by making many more things. So, I mean, sure, Marcel was the first thing that really took off. But before that, I was hustling it as an editor, editing Waterbirth videos and creating shorts with my friends that, you know, they never went anywhere. No one's ever seen those. But it wasn't. You got to. I don't want to say it's a numbers game, but I think you just have to remain in practice.
You just got to keep going. Stuff. You just got the it's a grind. It's the grind and the persistence of showing up. And I know you know this. Look, there's so many people that make it in this business who really aren't the most talented, but they're the most persistent.
Sure. Yes, totally. That's those people that are kicking down doors and giving executives elevator pitches when they're like 19.
Right. Exactly. But you also know people who are extremely talented, but haven't gotten the shot. So you know, and you wonder, you're like, why haven't they gotten the shot? But this other guy or this other gal got the shot and they're just not as talented. Like, nothing against them. It's just, they just don't have the goods the same.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. Absolutely. It's a fascinating thing. But if you can be true to yourself and be an expression of who you really are, something personal to you, that's the key. That's, you need your secret sauce. That secret sauce is what sets you apart from the crowd.
And you also won't, if you're making something that's personal and true to your heart, the money is, if you happen to be successful, it doesn't matter so much. Like, if you're making something true to your heart, you're expressing yourself. That's an end in and of itself.
That's the value.
It is, sustaining. That's, yeah,
absolutely. So, all right. So you guys shot it. You guys shot the shells in. Did you actually shot it stop motion?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then comped it or was it all on camera?
No. So we, I felt from the beginning, like, well, I want this to feel like a real documentary. I honestly had never seen, and maybe still haven't, like a quote unquote mockumentary.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
That doesn't just use it as kind of a joke and make fun of its characters. And so I was like, I want to do a mockumentary about this character and it'll be funny, but I want to treat him with dignity and tell his story with the same kind of respect that you would tell any documentary subject story. So part of the difficulty of that is like, okay, well then, you know, if it's going to be a Verite documentary and have that kind of intimacy, how are you going to do handheld motion with a stop motion character? And it's very, very hard, it turns out. But what we did was that we shot everything live action without the characters in it. And then Marcel and all the animated characters are shot on an animation stage and composited into live action footage. But because, like I've been describing it, like everyone knows how a Marvel movie gets made. It's like they shoot the live action. And then step two is that the VFX artists model and composite things in the computer into the footage. Instead of a VFX team, we also had a VFX team, but instead of a computer, we have our step two is a second shoot, an animation shoot. And because of that, the lighting on Marcel and all the movement and all the shadows has to match perfectly with the live action shoot, or he's not going to comp properly because it's a real piece of footage. Marcel is a real stop motion piece of footage. You can't alter the lighting later when you're compositing. And so that required our stop motion DP, Eric Atkins, being on set every day and taking the most meticulous notes on the lighting setup so that he could recreate it on the stages, down to like, okay, Marcel's standing 4 inches from a Coca-Cola can and that might bounce light. So like things like that, every scenario, every time I look down at his iPad on set, it just looked like scratchings from like a beautiful mind. It's just like equations and math and like measurements. And but he did it and he has a real engineering brain for that sort of thing. And it's incredible. And when Marcel's interacting with things, shadows, like for example, when he's in the car, we're passing by trees and there's shadows flickering across. And so for each one of those shadows, Eric had to take a look at the time code. Okay, we're passing a tree at this time code. And then automate a flag to pass by the light to sync up perfectly with when we pass by the tree. So all of that is super meticulous, incredible work by our cinematographers and the animation team.
I mean, the
VFX team, also crucial.
No, I just am in awe of that because I know what everything you're saying. I understand exactly what you went through and it's insane. It's beautiful. It's a beautifully shot film. The animation was so good that I was like, is this a CG character that they made look like stop motion? Because that would make the most sense, easiest play to do something like that. But then I would see like, I'm like, man, they got that stop motion, like the tear. Man, they got that stuff going. They're really doing a good job with that. If that is CG, like, man. So I was like, it was so, this movie fascinates me. It's so multiple levels, my friend, multiple levels. So then I have to ask you, why is everyone so touched by a shell with a googly eye and a small pair of shoes? Like, what is it about this character that everyone, I mean, I teared up in this damn movie, man. I'm like, why am I tearing up over a damn shell?
So funny, people keep coming up to me being like, I saw your movie, I bawled. And I have to be like, great.
I'm glad I made you.
That's awesome. Yeah. But I think that what is true about why he resonates with so many people is that we all know what it's like to sort of live in a world that wasn't made for us. You know, either from childhood, where you're, you know, literally you are. And then I think a lot of us, most of us grow up and we realize like, oh, dang it, I'm still living in a world that wasn't made for me, but just for different reasons than my height. And you know, Marcel, obviously that's his reality, but he doesn't get hung up. I find him very actually like inspirational to me. And when you talk about like, how do you sustain yourself over 7 years? It's like, I feel sustained and inspired by that character. He doesn't, he has these huge outsized obstacles thrown at him. He doesn't see the impossibility of that. he just sees it as like another thing to overcome. He will overcome it. It's not personal, just like yesterday and just like tomorrow. And he actually enjoys the challenge.
Well, I mean, my daughters haven't seen it yet because it hasn't come out yet as of this.
How old are they?
They're 10. So,
oh, great.
I did get, yes. I'm actually 25 years old. Look what they've done to me. I actually did at the screening get the stick on A20. The little peel offs and stick on like to. So they're in Marcel's in my girl's bathroom right now as we speak. It was put, like, first time. I'm like, here, girls, I got something for you. And they put them up and they're like, I don't know who this is, but they're drawn to them instantly. They haven't even seen. I think I showed them the trailer. They're like, oh, I want to watch that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And my girls are going to ball. It's going to be fantastic. Now, last question.
I'm so glad to hear that because
go ahead. You were saying?
I was just going to say, I'm so glad to hear that because I think, you know, like we made this movie to appeal to our own sensibilities. And it was always sort of a question, like, we want kids to be family friendly and we want kids to enjoy it. But we weren't sure if it was going to play young because it's, you know, it's not like the spectacle that like the Minions is or whatever. And so, but I've been really like really pleased to see that kids as young as like 5 or 6, like really love the movie and are laughing at all the same places that we are mostly.
I mean, you do have some throw up, you have throw up. So you got a couple, yeah, totally. you got a shell throwing up, sir. I mean, you've got them, sir. You've hit that demographic fairly well. Last question, man. And how did A24 get into this?
A24 got involved. I'm so like, they've done such a great job of helping to, you know, bring it to audiences and hopefully get, you know, make sure it's seen by the people that would want to see a movie like this. They got involved because we screened at the Telluride. We premiered at the Telluride Film Festival last August or September, and they bought it shortly after that. And it was such a beautiful coincidence that they were. I think that they're trying to, I don't know if they've, I don't know. I think they're trying to, you know, branch out and do movies that aren't just like the typical A24 movie, whatever that is.
Right. There's no typical A24 movie.
No, it's really weird. It's like people are like, oh, it's like folk horror or dark shit. And I'm like, I mean, Moonlight, Lady Bird, Minari, like none of those are.
Everything, everywhere, all at once. I mean,
yeah, totally.
Hot dog fingers, sir. There's hot dog fingers in that movie. and last question, what's next for Marcel? When's the sequel?
And I don't know. Whenever Ryan Reynolds frees up. I don't know. I mean, you know, hopefully the movie comes out, finds an audience, and there's a market for a sequel. But I know for sure that like I got so excited when we started developing his community, which was one of the last things that we sort of did because they're not in the movie for very long. And now like I love those characters, but they're only in for 5 seconds. And some of them have really great, you know, voice talent attached to them. So I'd love to do something that, you know, features a few more of those characters.
Listen, we'll see. Dean, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm so happy that this movie exists in the world and in this universe. I appreciate it. We need it more than ever. I think now we need a film like this. We need Marcel. We need some happiness. We need to connect to those kind of characters again. So, brother, man, I appreciate you making the movie and nothing but continued success, man. I can't wait to see what you come up with next, brother.
Thank you. This has been so fun talking to you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. This has been great. Also, where can I get a hustle hat?
At my store at.
This is a good plug.
I appreciate you, brother. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks a lot.
I want to thank Dean so much for coming on the show and sharing his journey with the tribe today. Thank you so much, Dean. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, head over to the show notes at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/215. And if you haven't already, please head over to screenwritingpodcast.com, subscribe, and leave a good review for the show. It truly helps us out a lot. And on a side note, guys, I just want to thank you all for listening and sharing this information that we have at Bulletproof Screenwriting, because it has become one of, if not the biggest, screenwriting podcast on Apple and Spotify. I've been seeing the numbers, and it is so humbling that the show has grown so much over the last couple of years. It has grown faster than I ever expected it to. So humbly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for all the support. Please continue to share this information. I want to help as many screenwriters and filmmakers out there as humanly possible. Thank you again so much for listening, guys. As always, keep on writing, no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.